Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about How to Be a Legendary Teacher by Adam Prosev. This book is a great book because we talk about everybody's saying now, well, I'm teaching you, I'm sharing, I'm giving lessons, I'm helping encourage you, I want to be able to let you learn something. Yet when we have this engagement with others, sometimes they come up with a little bit dissonance, disharmony, struggles, and we say, but I'm just not reaching them. They're not understanding what I'm saying. There's a lot of rebellion there. There's a lot of resistance. How can we really learn how to be a teacher and be able to show and lead by example, and then others will be able to understand, irregardless of sometimes the messages or the lessons we're trying to push upon them. To Adam, it is such a pleasure to have you with us here today to talk about this, and we are so glad to have you.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Adam, don't you think that people say they're a teacher these days, and they kind of take that word so lightly?
Yeah, I think so. I think teaching is just something that, I don't know, it's in my home country here of Australia, it's something you kind of get into university with when essentially it's kind of towards the bottom of the rung. I mean, even though that sounds a bit defeatist, but generally things like law, medicine are up the scale and teaching's down the scale, if you know what I mean.
Right, and you wonder why, because everybody needs some life lessons. I mean, you know, I mean, here in America, I mean, kids go to school, but they still can't balance a checkbook. They can't boil something on the stove. They can't turn around and even know how to take care of themselves. Don't you think sometimes, what are we really teaching anymore? Are we teaching life, or are we teaching old principles?
Well, I think, yeah, exactly. I think, you know, life is a series of lessons. I mean, obviously, well-being and all the things that you stand for and all the things that I love to teach are all about feeling good about yourself. I mean, that's in any capacity and at any stage in your life. I mean, even as a teacher, I love to learn things about myself, and then I walk away feeling better about myself. I think having confidence is one thing, but then having the ability to build on that confidence is even better.
Yeah. You know, I had this... I think it's a few years ago, I had said on the radio, I said that I think the kids in kindergarten need to start to learn chemistry, physics, and quantum physics in kindergarten, because learning about the old history of the things like the Civil War and all this other history of the past and engagements and terrible things, is it really serving? Do you think that it's actually serving us going forward? Are we learning more expanded about ourselves, or do we still need to keep drumming down that old path?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I think things like curriculum and what we're teaching and works, units of work and things like that are always under debate, especially in educational circles. I mean, even in life circles,
right.
People are always talking about, you know, why are we learning this, or, you know, people need to learn that or whatever. And it's sort of hard because I think every generation has its own focal point, like things that make it, define it. I mean, I guess in you know, we talk about 100 years ago, the focal point was like the Industrial Revolution and the motor car and how that changed society. And then we had TV come in and things like that, and then air conditioning and all this sort of thing. And you know, you talk to the older generations and they're like, oh, back in my day, you know, kids knew this and kids knew that. And the strangest thing happened a few years back. I taught a grade 4 class, like 9-year-olds, and we did a social studies unit and talked about social change. And I spoke to them about their grandparents' era, which would be my parents' era, you know, the baby boomers, and
right.
sort of grew up in the, you know, 50s and 60s, and then, you know, we were all sort of born in the 1970s, and how their generation was the biggest cause of change, you know, in modern history, and how even though the technological realm has become bigger and things like the internet and, you know, iPhones and laptops and iPads and all that, but I think it's interesting. Anthony Robbins spoke many years ago, one of his fantastic talks, about how, you know, we change, society changes, but essentially our ability to learn doesn't change. I mean, we haven't evolved that much over the past, say, 25 years of the modern technology era to really cope with, you know, how to keep up with this sort of thing. I mean, it's, you know, I think kids are in some ways given too much to kind of take on board in some ways. Like they,
right.
I think the curriculum very expanded in, like you were saying, it's expanded, but like, I don't think it's expanding in a good way. Sometimes going back to things like basic arithmetic, you know, basic sounds, basic words, basic reading, the old three R's. I mean, everyone says, we don't want to go backwards, we want to move forwards. And I said, yeah, but, you know, some things that were behind us were actually pretty good. So we want to move, you know, back to things that actually worked.
Don't you think sometimes when we are trying to teach children at any age, we always come upon a part of resistance because you want to be able to mirror the example or show them something in comparison, you know, in life. But sometimes when we're teaching them something, it is so it doesn't even exist anymore. Like we think about the world wars, right? And we say, well, this is a tanker and this is, you know, this is how they fought wars. Well, now,
sure.
in the year 2019, we are so on the opposite end of fighting that type of existence. It's almost like it's something foreign that you're trying to put into them when it shouldn't even exist anymore. Like, how can we dissect ourselves away from those old things that no longer serve a purpose?
Yeah, I think I think the biggest thing that I've learnt as a teacher over the years is you're teaching the whole child. I mean, children start learning the moment they're born, or people start learning the moment
right.
they're born. And then as a teacher, I look at it as what they call the holistic approach, where you don't
right.
mind, body, soul, because in the sense of, I think teaching has become, I mean, I think part of teaching's always been very clinical, and you have to be very, you know, precise with certain aspects of teaching, especially things like, you know, teaching children how to read and write and be competent. But I think even things like, I mean, in the last couple of years, I've introduced meditation into every part of my teaching. And the children know, even the older kids know, if I say it's meditation time, then it's time to calm down, breathe, you know, get into that zone, or to try to find a better zone to concentrate or to calm down in. And that's great. And the kids really respond well to that, because I say to them, mm-hmm. you know, even if you're not into meditation or you're not into breathing or you think this is, you know, a complete waste of time, you know, respect the idea that you might learn something different from it anyway, and then go with that. I think it's, you know, it's about stepping away. I mean, everyone in the teaching world likes to be like, you know, the Robin Williams character in Dead Poets Society, be a rebel, you know, be out there for a cause and be out there, you know, trying to, you know, establish something that's meaningful. But then at the same time, it's you've got to sort of, you know, find something that you can gel with as a teacher, and then the kids pick up on that kind of rhythm and on that kind of enthusiasm.
Well, in essence there, what you're really doing is trying to create self-respect, self-worth, self-value. And isn't that mm-hmm. the other opposite end of self-destruction, self-terrorizing, self-destroying that we've been in, just as I said before, you know? So in essence, if you're teaching that in school, then they're able to, once they've got that incorporated within their self, they're able to take that home and be able to learn how to live that way, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one thing that I've always taught kids, especially, I mean, I taught, you know, started teaching preschool as a first-year teacher many years ago, and even with that, taught there was an aspect of kindy, which is the children even younger than that. They had a class next door. And I said to the children, you know, you are the boss of you, and I'm the boss of the situation. So everything you take away from this, you have to own it, and then you have to make sense of it. And it was amazing talking to these 3- and 4-year-olds. I mean, they got it in a second. They knew exactly what they wanted, what they needed, and then how they could apply that to their little, you know, 3- or 4-year-old life. I mean, mm-hmm. with whatever constrictions, you know, with obviously you got mum and dad and everybody else telling you what to do and when to do it. But I say to the children, you know, independence is probably one of the biggest things that you'll ever own. And then I think you've got to interweave dependence into that, as in you've got to obviously, you know, you've got to toe the line, you've got to conform to a point. I mean, it's like that, I think in my book I stated, if you don't have that, you just have educational chaos, which doesn't work for anybody.
Right.
And I think that that is not a road that you want to go down. Like, that's the road that leads to things like, you know, self-destruction, like you were talking about. I think that's the road that leads to self-doubt and fear. And I think everybody has that, but it's that sense of moving through that. I say to the kids, you know, it's this thing of, even with children, with people sort of say, oh, you know, this child's got bad behavior. And I say, no, they're just not making good choices. And I say to the children, make better choices about what it is that you want and be prepared for the consequences, good or bad.
Right. In your book, How to Be a Legendary Teacher, you have the directive towards, you know, teaching into schools and that type.
Mm-hmm.
However, everybody is a teacher. Do you think that sometimes when you take up a profession to be a teacher in a school, maybe somewhere along the path you've had a great teacher, or your family might have been in teaching professions, or you've learned something very important about life from a teacher and you wanted to share that on. Do you think that's how teachers get started?
Yeah, some teachers do. I think it's interesting, in my book I kind of went through that a little bit at the beginning, and it's a strange myriad of life journeys, or life paths. I think, I mean, I loved being a kid. I loved, in some ways, I loved school, but I wasn't exactly the most well-behaved child. It was a bit of an irony, but I loved learning. And my mum was a teacher. My granddad was a teacher. I mean, I was actually surrounded by teachers. So, but I didn't ever feel this sense of, yes, I'm called to be a teacher, an educator. I think it was, for me, just something that, it kind of grew as I got older. I remember thinking about, you know, what did I want to do with my life? And, you know, as everybody does, you get to your teens and you start thinking about your career or whatever. And I wanted to be a police detective. And some of my friends were police detectives when I was a little bit older. And one of them said to me, you know, you'll be a fantastic detective because you're very perceptive, you're very intuitive, and you're big and you look intimidating. And I thought, well, that was good. But funny enough, he said to me, but you've got to do things that are not in the sense morally questionable, but you've got to basically roll with, let's just say, less than cooperative people. And right. I said, well, you know, okay. And he gave me a few examples, this one good friend of mine, and I just kind of went, no, I don't think that would be the career for me. And then I rolled in being a preschool teacher at university. So I kind of knew. It's like when you, I mean, the strange thing about my life is I go through a series of different events, and I actually have really cryptic dreams about where I'm meant to be, like, and it's really cool, because I think every time I dream of something that is very symbolic and or very lucid, I know exactly what it means and what I need to do, and I guess I've been lucky like that. But then I think even teachers, some people aren't born teachers and they go into it with different motives. Like maybe it was something that was just what their parents wanted them to do, or they didn't have good marks or whatever. But I think it's like anything. You can go into something half-baked and then think, well, no, you can make a difference. You can become a holistic learner, just like the kids. I think if teachers are willing to step away from, you know, this, oh, it's a paid job, oh, it's a secure job, oh, you know, it can be a lifelong career, and you know, it's, you know, there's no kind of, you know, downsizing or that kind of thing. And you know, and I think, you know, but at the same time, I mean, some of my friends, they say to me, you know, what's the best thing about teaching? I say, I go to school and I've got you know, my fan club of 800 kids waiting for me every day.
Right.
And it's not that we have a lot of fun, and I make it fun, but it's all about, you know, game on, step up, you know, learning discipline, learning self-application, learning how to be innovative and creative. And I think that comes through the ability to want to have a better world. I think as much as that sounds simplistic and very, I don't know, it even sounds corny in a way, but it's true. I say to the kids, there's nothing wrong with being a good person. There's nothing wrong with having values. And not that we're trying to, oh, yeah, put ourselves up on a pedestal and look at us, we're the shining light of hope or anything like that, even though that helps. But I think it's sometimes just a matter of having a conviction and then working towards what you believe for that to be in education.
Don't you think also, too, when people say, I'd love to be a teacher, I think it's great, and they see it as this illusion that they've created in their mind how it should play out, yet in essence, don't you think being a teacher is also challenging about your own insecurities, your own parts of your life that you may have not addressed? And also, too, it's challenging in that you find pieces of life that may not be as easy. Just as you shared, you know, about going, you know, to be, if you had wanted to be, as you said, the police or anybody of those other people, you know, being another person, you know, doing a different job, do you have the qualifications for it? Well, really, as a teacher, your qualifications you might have, but you're also all of these other parts of self are going to come into play. Don't you think they get challenged?
Oh, absolutely. I think, and they get challenged on a daily basis. I think the main thing that I try to encourage and instill in the younger teachers, especially I'm kind of, well, I've been teaching, what, 23 years now, and I'm a mentor to most of the junior teachers, and we're very lucky to have other mentors as well, and I have my own mentors, which is even better. And I think that, yeah, the challenge is always there. I say to them, it's like, I mean, it's a bit like a relationship. You know, you have your highs and your lows. You have times when, you know, you're riding on air, and other times where, you know, you're at the bottom of the sea. I mean, it's just that roller coaster ride. But that's the best part of it. I say to people, the challenges are meant to be there. I mean, there's a man called Tim Costello here in Australia. He was the CEO of World Vision, a charity organization, for many years, and he's an Anglican minister as well. And he wrote a book called Faith, and I read it a few months ago, and he spoke about challenges in the book and how life should be about facing challenges, like praying for challenges and looking at obstacles head on, because he said they're going to come. And it's not about, you know, I think sometimes people pray or meditate or project for good things, which is fine. You can have goals and aspirations and intentions, and that's fantastic. But it's those challenges that will really test you, especially as a teacher. I think it's whether you can walk away from the day and have an unbelievably tough day and still say to yourself, yes, I gave it my best, and I'll be back tomorrow to do even better. And I think that's the key to being a legendary teacher, because it's not about putting in a good performance. It's about coming back again and again and making it better.
How about the idea of the topics, homelessness, food insecurity, abuse, and violence? And we see this, you know, when kids are coming to school and they're sharing that that's what's going on in their home life. But also, too, teachers may have had it in their past, but also we don't even want to talk about it. Teachers may be having it in the present, even though they're coming to work every day. So don't you think that those topics are always an undercurrent within teaching?
Yes, absolutely. I think, I mean, I talk with other teachers that I work with, my colleagues, every day about the challenges that children bring to school, I mean, of all ages. Mm-hmm. And like you said, the challenges that the adults, the other teachers, the parents,
right,
the admin, the support staff, they all bring challenges with them as well. And
right,
it's interesting that, I mean, even though I was brought up Catholic and I spent a fair bit of time as a young person in the Christian church, like being born again and that sort of thing, and learned a lot about, I mean, obviously faith was a big thing, as in faith, as in, you know, you have God. And then obviously as I got older, I sort of started to look at other, you know, alternative types of spirituality. But the one thing that came through was the ability to believe in myself, but also to forgive myself and to forgive others. I think it's, you know, kids come to school and it's interesting because this happens pretty much every day that I go to school. You know, I'll discipline a child and, you know, you've got to do the, you know, good cop, bad cop thing, and then they, you know, they get cranky, and I've got to say to them, okay, this is what I expected, and you know, you broke this rule, or you did this, or you did that, and this is not acceptable, and all that. And then the next day, I come back to school, and I greet them and say, good morning, how are you? And one kid said to me, actually, the other day, he said, why are you being polite to me again for? I said, well, that's what I do. And he said, but I wasn't polite to you. And I said, well, that was your decision, but I'm deciding to come to school again and be polite and start over. And I forgive you. You know, you're a child. I don't expect you to know everything. And this is a lesson for you to learn that there is forgiveness in the world. And you don't have to be angry at people because they don't, you know, let you do what you want to do. And for him, that little kid, it was a lesson because I'll just keep doing that. I mean, I know that his behavior is not perfect, but then my teaching's not perfect, so I can't have these ridiculous expectations on him. And then I say to the other kids, you know, I want you to look at what I'm doing and think about how you can apply that to you in a positive way. You don't have to mirror me. I mean, I can only be myself and you can only be yourself. And it's amazing that I think even with, you know, things like violence at home and all kinds of, you know, domestic unrest, I don't have figures on it, but people sort of keep saying that it's getting worse and, you know, kids have got tougher lives. And I say to them, I guess it's about believing in a better world. I think it's like, you know, you don't want to walk around sort of, you know, with this sort of idea of statistics in your head of everything getting worse, whether it is or not. And not that you want to stick your head in the sand and pretend that it's not, but be realistic about, in my book, I actually got this idea from one of my mentors. It's a sphere of influence. I say to the kids, you have your sphere of influence with things you can control in your little world, and that's about all you can control, and you've got to own that sphere. And whatever's outside that sphere, you've got to accept that that is what it is. You know, you can pray for it, or you can send it good energy, and you can meditate on better outcomes for those people or those situations, which is great, but at the same time, then you've got to let go of it. It's not going to be part of what you do day to day. And I think that challenge, like I said, getting back to those challenges is coming back. It's like, I remember many years ago, I used to love watching the NHL, the ice hockey on the cable TV here in Australia. And famous commentator Barry Melrose, who taught the famous Wayne Gretzky, said, I mean, even though it was in a reference to, you know, the rough stuff in hockey, he said, it's not about winning or losing. It's about showing up again. It's about coming back and giving it your best. And I thought, that's it. You know, I just apply that to a positive spin with teaching and believe within myself that one, it is enjoyable, and that I'll always get the best out of myself before I can get the best out of the people or the children that I teach.
Well, in essence, truly, though, what you're doing is you're really sharing how to become a human being. Hold on, I got the hiccups.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're really teaching how to become a better human being all along versus just learning how to get a job, J-O-B, to get out of the situation they're in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's. I mean, I say to the children every day, you know, because I teach health and fitness at the moment. I'm teaching the younger children things like, you know, balance and coordination and how to throw and catch a ball and healthy eating. And then the older children, I teach cyber safety and internet safety and socialization and how to express emotions positively and stuff like that. And I say to them, this is what I live and breathe, because everything that I teach you, I have to own it for me. Like, I don't go home and have this kind of dual life. You know, I think the hardest thing to educate children about is the fact that they'll see contradiction everywhere they turn. Like the parents will say to them, be healthy, yet they'll smoke, or they'll, you know, say to them, be honest, and then they cheat on their taxes and stuff like that. And the kids know about it. And I sort of, and they tell me, they say, oh, Mum does this or Dad does that. And I say, well, the best thing you can do, and I said, I had to do this with my parents for many years because my parents were wonderful people, but they were imperfect, I said, was just to love them and to keep believing in them and keep being thankful for the good things they do for you. And even if it's only minuscule. And I say to the kids, you know, because we have a lot of political conversations with the older kids, the kids who are just about to go to high school, and, you know, we have different things politically going on, as we all do in every country, and the kids see a lot of contradiction and a lot of, you know, ironies and things that don't make sense. And I say to them, that's the hard thing, because when I was a kid, the same thing was happening, you know. People were saying one thing and then doing something else, you know. People were, you know, professing, you know, love for the environment, yet polluting in other ways, or, you know, professing, you know, upstanding, you know, values, and then living inappropriate lives in other ways. And I say, you know, the kids, what you see for me is what you get. I said, that's the best part. Everything I do outside of school, being that, you know, where I live here in Cairns in Australia, is it's a city of about 100,000 people, but everyone knows everyone, and everyone sees everyone. I mean, there's, you know, it's one of those places which I love to be in, but it's, you know, I can't go too far without seeing somebody I know and some child that I've taught, and they're watching everything I do or everything I say. They take it down, their little brains absorb it, and I say to them, and they come up to me and say, you said that, then you did this, and I'm like, oh, that's very good of you. I make it a bit fun, you know. I sort of say, thank you for making me feel terrible about myself.
Right.
I'll walk away and I'll think about that, and, you know, I really ham it up. But then I say to them, well, that's the hard thing with life, is you've got to believe in yourself, you've got to have self-confidence, and you've got to have self-worth, but then you've got to be able to kind of rise above judgment and criticism, you know, not only for society, but for your own path. I think it's very easy, you know, children, I say to them, it's very easy to get angry, it's very easy to become discontent, it's easy to become disconnected from life, but the hardest thing is to keep bouncing back. Like I said before, you've got to step up. And even though, you know, I love listening to Oprah and her Super Soul sessions on my iPod, and all of the stuff that she's been, you know, professing for years, it's all about bounce back, you know. Terrible things are going to happen. You're going to have hardships. You're going to have challenges, but keep bouncing back. There's not this, oh, gee, this is too hard. I mean, I've hit the too hard point, and by the grace of God and the universe and all my angels, something picks me up and pushes me through to the next level. And I say to the children, you know, you've seen that. You've seen me at my best. You've seen me at my worst. You know, you've seen me with points where I can lose control very easily and become, you know, well, I call it, you know, Mr. Nice and then Mr. Not So Nice or Mr. Cranky. But I say to the kids, you know, it's too easy to do that. You know, I think parents, not saying, you know, I'm going to blame parents or adults, but it's very easy to misunderstand children and then misunderstand intentions and then have this view, oh, these kids are like that, or these kids will never be any good, or these kids are, you know, going to always be like this. And you think, well, no, you know, I've seen I've seen children come from absolutely terrible backgrounds with unbelievably, you know, terrible lives and make something of themselves. And I say to them, you know, how did you do it? And they say, because of people like you. You've told me to believe in myself. You've told me to keep bouncing back, and I believed it. And I say, well, that's cool, because I got to keep believing it now for me. So.
Right. Don't you think sometimes that people become a teacher for a specific reason? In other words, they say, they take on a challenge in their life and they say, I'm doing this because, you know, that, why do you want to be a teacher? I want to be a teacher because. And it's almost as if they are now taking upon a lesson to learn for themselves. And sometimes teachers get to the end and they've either learned the lesson, they decide the lesson wasn't theirs, or they decide that they just can't learn the lesson, whatever it is, and then they give up. I think sometimes when we say, is if we ever would go into something, an engagement with others, is say, let's go in with, why am I a teacher? I'm a teacher just to be. I'm just to be there. That's it. Zero. In other words, not have a fully prescribed path ahead of you, because if you go on that path with blinders, you might miss all of the things around you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
how you can engage with others or others can engage with you, and you're stuck on this blinded kind of path. Don't you think sometimes the legendary teachers are ones that may or may not start out that way, but also, too, when they get to the end, they said, I don't have any blinders anymore. I just experience everything, and we're all drawn into this together. Isn't that what a legendary teacher is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. I think you've, at some point, it's the value of having an open mind and having the belief that there's always more to learn is a great thing. I think, I mean, that's the hardest thing. A lot of teachers that I encounter, I mean, there's a lot of teachers with open minds as well, but a lot of teachers seem to kind of get, not stuck, but become sort of focused on this, like I said in the book, you know, trying to find a good school or a good situation, or, you know, I've got to go, I want to live in that city or that place and teach there, you know. And I say that, and even every year here in, you know, in Australia, as we do all over the world, every year they ask you, you know, what do you want to do for next year, and what are your preferences for teaching? Do you want to stay where you are, or do you want to move, or do you want to transfer to another school or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And I say to them, you know, I'll go with whatever. Like, I have goals and intentions, but I sort of have this underwriting belief. Like you were saying, after a while, I just say, whatever opportunity presents itself, I'll take. And if it feels right, it is right. And it's amazing that, you know, starting off as a preschool teacher way back when and moving through, like, primary school, elementary school, as you have it in the States, and how even moving now into what they call specialist teaching, which is now, you know, health and physical education, it's amazing that I know that everything that I've taught and everything that I've experienced, good, bad, or indifferent, has been part of my learning experience. I mean, it's like that. I do meet, I mean, not that, I wouldn't say this is a bad thing, but I do meet some teachers and they've, you know, they've been at the same school forever, and some of them have even taught the same grade, and I said, or the same subject, and I say to them, oh, that's fine, you know. And they ask me, what have I done? And, you know, not that I'm trying to impress them, but I rattle off all the places I've taught and all the things I've done and things I've experienced and places I've lived. And I say to them, that can happen at any age. I think it's, some people sort of sometimes say, oh, I'm too old to move, or I'm too settled, you know, got kids, got family, blah, blah, blah. And you think, well, no, you know, you can pack up and do what you want when you want. I think you have that ability to, like I said in the book, teach anywhere in the world, teach most places within your country, no matter where it is. And I think it's that ability to keep reinventing yourself, you know, and sometimes you may get stuck. I mean, I've been stuck at different points in my teaching with different things. And like I said, God, the universe, my angels, something comes along and prompts me to kind of move or to adapt or to change direction or to change lane, so to speak. And I know in my heart of hearts, it's always the best move. It's uncomfortable. It's sometimes challenging. It's disruptive. But at the same time, I know that even for me, I don't want to sit there and be, you know, the same teacher year in, year out. I mean, even with preschool way back when, I had a winning formula. It was like, you know, winning the playoffs every year, you know. We'd have, you know, all these different things happen and they all just turned to gold and everyone loved it and the kids loved it and everyone said, oh, you could keep doing this forever. And I said, yeah, I could. And it would be enjoyable, but it wouldn't be challenging after a while. And I think the key for me at that point was to move to a different school to find a different type of teaching. And then I changed cities a couple of times and moved into a couple of different teaching places and states and stuff like that. And then eventually I realized that even that journey, like, I think it's interesting because teachers talk about, you know, retirement, I'll get to the end and this will be that or that, you know, like this. And I say to them, I don't even think about retirement. You know, to me, it doesn't really exist because I know, I mean, this sounds strange because some people go, well, you know, I might change my mind in 10 years, but I think a legendary teacher never retires. You're always dabbling in something. You're always teaching, you know, relief or doing contract teaching or doing tutoring or mentoring or something. It never goes away, and I don't think it should ever go away either. It's something that's within you forever.
Right. Yeah, it's truly about, are you willing to be able to engage and expand and learn just as well as you're teaching, you know what I mean? I think sometimes we say, just as you shared, do we ever stop teaching? I think everybody, if they truly looked at it, we're teaching, we're learning, and we're growing. And those that we believe, like looking at them from the outside, we say they're stuck or whatever. Well, maybe they're just rooted in some of their experiences or in a different realm, you know. Maybe they're just, they're just in a different space. And maybe they're holding space for some of us. So I think sometimes we say, is it all about having the best, being the best? It's truly about being able to learn and engage with everyone, don't you think?
Absolutely, yeah. I think learning and engaging with everybody and every situation and like I said, having a variety of experiences, I think it's and projecting that onto the students. I think it's when I say to the kids sometimes, it's not about what I'm here to teach you, it's about what you want to learn and what you want to absorb. And then, like I said before, what you want to take away.
And then what they teach you.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, I stated that in the book many times. I mean, some of the best lessons, even talking back about preparation, I think a lot of teachers sort of want these, you know, perfect lessons or perfect classes, I don't know what it is. And I say to them, you know, some of the best lessons I ever taught, the kids actually, we just kind of got together at the beginning and I'd sort of give them the topic and I'd say to them, it'd be like going to university. I'd say to them, this is what we need to learn. How do we make this interesting? Because sometimes I would find it boring as well. And the kids would, I'd say it's an open house, you know, blue sky thinking. Let's, you know, get some ideas going. And even with little kids, I've done that. And the little kids are like, you know, I think even for adults to give 4 and 5 year olds the ability to question what it is they're learning and why they're learning it is giving them the opportunity to enhance their learning and then turn around and become the teachers as well. I think sometimes especially the little kids, they're very perceptive, they're ultra intuitive, and their little radars pick up everything. And I say to them, you know, yes, you need to be able to, you know, follow certain instructions or, you know, certain guidelines or whatever, but at the same time, you know, this is not, you know, the gospel. It's not, you know, the truth according to everybody. It's just what I'm teaching you right now, but I need you to, you know, build on that truth, build on that experience, and then believe that there's something better for you within that. I mean, I got into the topic of, I don't even know how this happened. I just went to there's a crystal shop here in Cairns, and not that I was into crystals. My grandmother was heavily into crystals and other people in my family, and I bought a crystal, and beautiful polished adventurine crystal about the little size of a little oval shape, about, you know, small, about the size of a golf ball, and then took it to school and thought, this will be my calming crystal, and started, you know, to show the kids. And I said, you know, when I get cranky or upset, I rub it, I'm calm, you know.
Right.
And even in my mind, I thought, I'm not even sure if adventurine is good for calming, but I'm using it. I'm going with it. I mean, I know it's good for prosperity. But so I thought I'd go with it. And then within about 6 months, all of the sort of, you know, the 3-year-olds, the 4-year-olds, the 5-year-olds, the 6-year-olds, and the 7-year-olds started to kind of, oh, these, you know, we love crystals too. And, you know, you talk about how they form and the whole geology and, you know, science behind crystals and rocks and the earth and volcanoes and everything else. And I thought, wow, you know, the kids, one little girl came to school and she had this box and it had 100 crystals in it. And she knew every crystal and every property and every way it had been formed. And I thought, man, that was the best lesson I ever had, because, man, I didn't need to, you know, I'm thinking, well, I didn't know this stuff. And she had us all enthralled for a whole morning. And I said to the kids, you know, what did you learn from that? And they said, oh, wow, it was fascinating. And I said, well, that's it. Go with the fascinating, but then build on that for yourself. I mean, it could be, you know, about animals or dinosaurs or whatever. I mean, there's sort of no kid walking this earth who doesn't love, you know, reading about animals or dinosaurs. And then I think crystals and rocks are the next one up the rung. So
That's a great
experience. And, you know, like I said, all these little kids have got their little calming crystals now. And, you know, I said, if you get cranky, get it out, start rubbing it. It'll make you feel good. And I said, even if it, you know, people think it's silly, who cares? I think it's cool. And that's what I do. And being that I'm their role model and their boss, they love it. They think, you know, if he does it, it's cool, and we want to be cool, and everything's cool, and that's cool.
That's right. And, you know, that brings us right back, you know, Adam, to the beginning, is that to be a legendary teacher, you show by example, you lead by example. You know, Adam, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, they can, well, they can buy my book. That would be great.
Yeah.
My book is available on Amazon.com, and they can also look up my website, which is www.myfullnameadamprociv.com. And, yeah, I'm obviously in the process of starting the whole social media thing. I wasn't big on it before, but everyone keeps telling me I've got to, you know, get into social media, not so much in a big way, but obviously for the sake of, you know, promoting education in my book and promoting good thought and good values and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, that's they're all the contacts. And, yeah, it's hopefully, you know, I can help people and encourage people, and like you said, we're all teachers and learners. It's not relegated just to kids, it's for anybody. And if I can encourage anybody to be a better version of themselves, I'm all for it.
Well, Adam, it was such a pleasure to speak with you today, because I think sometimes people say, I want to do this because, as if they have to fix something of their self, and they don't even really realize how you know, how much effect they have on others around them. So I think teachers are a great step, and you've really shared about how to become a great one.
Excellent. No, thank you, Dr. Jeanette, for having me on. I very much appreciate it. I can't thank you enough. I really, really do appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. Maybe we'll have you back again, you know, in the new year, Adam, because I think a lot of times being a teacher is also being a coach. So maybe we'll take it on that road, yes?
That would be wonderful, Dr. Jeanette. Yeah, if we could be on again, that would be an absolute pleasure. Believe me. Yes, I'd love that very much, though.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay. Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Adam Prociv, again, his book is How to Be a Legendary Teacher. Please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page for more information and to go directly to his website. And it truly is about saying, how can we help share with others, guide them through the process, be able to say, I'm here to support you, listen, learn, and teach along with you. And how can we just see that we're all in this together? Isn't that something to have someone to lean on, to be listened to, value, self-worth? All of these things are about our human existence. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit DrJeanetteGallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.